Hello, welcome to this episode of Debt Wired. I'm Yelena Sage, Head of Leverage Loans at Debt Wired. I'm pleased to have with me Ben Thompson, Head of EMEA Leverage Finance Capital Markets at JP Morgan. Hi, Ben. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Yelena, and thank you for having us. Thanks for the invitation.
Ben will share his outlook on the leverage finance markets with us today. We've seen leverage finance markets post record issuance this year, a good recovery from last year's lows. Ben, could you give us an overview of the current technical backdrop in the leveraged loans and bond markets? And how do you see some of the demand drivers evolving?
Of course, happy to. Yes, as you say, it has been a very good volume year here in Europe across leveraged finance, both fixed rate high yield bonds and floating rate notes or leveraged loans here in Europe. So we're currently closing in on the second busiest year ever in terms of gross volume in the European market. And, you know, if we continue at the pace at which we're going and have been running all year, there's every chance that we could get to the all-time record for volume in our market, which is very encouraging after a couple of difficult years through COVID and then in 2022. Overall, the backdrop remains very strong, as you suggest. As to the technical drivers of this, I think it's a couple of things. While we have seen these increased volumes, the vast majority of those higher volumes has been refinancing activity. So if you look across the loan asset class here in Europe, almost 70% year to date has been for refinancing or repricing activity, so not net new money deals. And likewise, on the high yield fixed rate side, you've seen over 50%, between 50 and 60%. Of volume year to date just be refinancing, so taking out old bonds with new bonds. So what that's done is not generated a huge amount of incremental investment opportunity for the buy side. And likewise, offsetting that in terms of flows, you've seen very constructive amounts of money moving into both the floating rate and the fixed rate asset classes in leveraged finance here in Europe. So if you look at a couple of benchmarks, we've seen a large increase in the amount of money that's flowing into mutual funds in the high yield space. The sample that we track, which only represents about 20% of the overall mutual fund asset class in high yield in Europe, we've seen $7 to $7.5 billion of money flow into that 20% of the asset class year to date. So if you just do simple math and gross that up, that would equate to about $35 billion on an asset class, which is roughly $400 billion in size. So that's a material increase in the size of the market. I think we're creeping up on 10% just through that mutual fund flow this year. And then we've also seen money flowing in more anecdotally from privately managed accounts, sovereign wealth funds, et cetera. So all of that has put an incredibly strong footing under the fixed rate market. Likewise, on the floating rate side, where most of the activity that does takes place in the form of leveraged loans, although it's been a good year for floating rate note issuance and high yield as well. We've seen this so far the second strongest year ever for CLO creation. Again, I'll be very surprised if by the end of the year we haven't broken through our record issuance in the CLO asset class at 39 billion euros, which was the 2021 record. We're already into the low to mid 30 billions of new issuance this year. And also encouragingly in that asset class, we're seeing an increasing number of resets and reprices on the CLO side, which doesn't create new money and new buying power, but it does enable the existing embedded CLO base to participate more actively in some of the newer issue, which is coming on the loan side, which has been at tighter prices as the market has ground tighter. So where does that all leave us? Where that leaves us is in a very, very favorable balance in favor of borrowers and issuers, where there's a huge amount of cash needing to be deployed on the buy side across both fixed rate and floating rate assets in leveraged finance in Europe, and a very limited supply of net new money for them to engage with from the sell side.
Right. So in terms of looking at the supply, I mean, as you mentioned, we've seen a lot of refinancing and repricing type of transactions and very little new money. Going forward, should we see a bit of an uptick in new money, or is it going to be more or less of the same kind of activity that we've seen in the past 9 months?
I think the answer to the question is yes, yes, and yes. So I think we have seen, and encouragingly, we did see a nice little spike in the amount of M&A-related and new money-related underwritten financing as we crept through the summer months, late summer and through August. So we did come out of the summer period with the largest amount of new money M&A volume underwritten in Europe. Still nothing like the peak that we saw towards the end of 2021. We were only at about a third of that volume. So to give you some numbers around that, we were looking at about $12.5 billion of M&A-related new money coming into the autumn season here in Europe. That compared to a peak of almost $40 billion at the end of 2021. So good recovery from where we had been over the course of 23 and 24, with that level hovering in the very low to mid single digit billions. Seeing that go above $10 billion and up to $12.5 billion was very encouraging. Now, the question is, will we be able to regenerate that kind of forward calendar as some of these deals come to market and clear? And I think the answer there is a little bit ambiguous, and I'll come back to it in a second. What we have seen, though, already is a fair bit of that $12.5 billion come to market. Some of it has priced, for example, the jumbo transaction cross-border for Belron, which priced yesterday, was a big component of that new money. So we've seen some of that price, and we have not seen a steady regeneration of that $12.5 billion figure. So that has come down. Now, before everyone gets too depressed, we are seeing very constructive signs of potential new activity. So there are a number of opportunities that are in this sort of formative stage, whether that's sales processes kicking off, or things like dividend recaps being pulled together. There is a definite wave of new supply that will be coming. What I would say is, as we sit here today, it's very unlikely that the scale of that new activity and that new money activity will be anywhere near close enough to bring the market back into a better technical balance between supply and demand. So in the interim, what that means is we will continue to see a good volume of refinancing activity. There's still things to play for there. 24, as you can imagine, this late in the year, the maturities have been cleaned out, and actually a huge piece of 2025. 2025's maturities have also been refinanced, both across loans and bonds. But there's still lots of stuff to go after in 26 and 27 in terms of maturities. So that will continue to drive the refinancing activity as those maturities come closer. But also, as these conditions remain as favorable as they are, it's not nearly as daunting to access the market as it would have been even a year ago. And if you just look broadly at the high yield index in Europe across the full data set of high yield bonds issued in Europe, we're seeing that index now in the low 6% range. And a year ago, right about this time a year ago, that was as high as low 8s. So you've seen a 200 basis point compression in the high yield index in Europe in the last 12 months. And that certainly is a good sign for issuers who want to access the market or borrowers who want to go to the loan market. There is definitely a very, very strong backdrop. So very long answer to your question, but as I said, it was yes and yes. We do expect to see a nice little tick up here over the next quarter in terms of net new money for M&A in particular, but also for dividend recaps. But at the same time, the volume of refinancing and repricing activity will continue to be very high.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, as you mentioned, it's been positive for underwriting as well. Can you maybe take us through in a bit more detail in terms of the M&A and LBO deal making at the moment? Previously, valuation gaps were hindering activity. Is this still the case? And with the interest rate cuts on the horizon, could we see like that as a catalyst for more M&A coming up?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. As the cost of financing comes down, I mean, that will certainly be beneficial and a good catalyst for future M&A activity. I'd say, though, if you think about the availability of financing and financing at leverage levels, which frankly are very comparable to where we were pre-COVID and pre-invasion in 2022, the leverage levels have actually been fairly resilient after we got through the difficult year in 2022. We have seen market leverage levels return to where they were before. It hasn't really been, per se, the amount of leverage available to buyers to finance properties, but the cost of debt has definitely been more expensive. And as I mentioned in the prior comment, we've now seen a rather impressive tightening of yields in the leverage finance space in Europe in the last 12 months. And that should well support anyone who's out looking to raise money to do a new buyout. As to the valuation gap, we have seen some constructive movement there, and I think there are a number of factors in play that have been, you know, working to close that gap. You still do run into situations, though, where there's a bit of seller disappointment, and whether that results in a transaction not completing and getting withdrawn from the market, or from some sort of dramatic last-minute negotiations and perhaps the inclusion of some sort of seller take-back investment in the property as it changes hands. We are seeing the use of some creative means to try to get to that little last bit of the valuation gap. But by and large, seems to be a more constructive tone on the side of sellers who are willing to accept slightly lower multiples or accept the fact that they may have to hold on to a minority share or provide some kind of vendor financing. And likewise, on the buying end, we are seeing the buyers willing to reach a little bit more. Part of that goes back to the start of the comment about the fact that financing is perhaps a little more affordable now for the buyer because rates have come down and yields have come down. But also, I think it's just an urgency to deploy the dry powder that has built up, particularly on the private equity side over the past couple of years.
Just to sort of go back to, you mentioned the leverage has increased. What kind of levels are we talking about at the moment? Like, what are the palatable sort of leverage ratios around 5.5?
Well, what I'd say is, and this has always been the case, it's a nuanced answer. So there are a huge range of acceptable and reasonable leverage levels, but it varies dramatically from industry to industry. So yes, if you're looking at some of the very resilient cash flow generative businesses and think of things like healthcare or some of the better end of the services sector, some of the sort of tech related names that generate strong free cash flow, yes, in those instances, can you see leverage levels creep up into the mid to high 5x range in the current market? Absolutely. But there are a number of cyclical sectors where valuations, frankly, may not be reaching 6x, and that's in terms of enterprise value. And in cases like that, then you might see leverage in the 3.5 to 4x range, a new transaction. So it's variable. What I would say is, in general, on a senior secured basis, though, we are getting back to levels across that spectrum of different types of deals and sectors that weren't materially different from where we were, again, in the sort of easier times, whether it was 2019 or 2021. In general, though, I think that the market has become more selective in the past year, and we're seeing it now in terms of dispersion and how things are trading in the secondary markets. The credit investor in Europe is definitely, I think, less willing to push leverage on all sectors and is being more selective about where they will stretch into those higher echelons that we were talking about in the 5x range versus some of the cyclicals, which in the past, prior to COVID and prior to the invasion, you might have seen a little more stretching for leverage on the cyclical names. I think there's a lot more differentiation now than there used to be comparable to 5 years ago, for example.
Thanks, Ben. And now, can we turn our attention to private credit? Private credit has grown into quite a competitor to the syndicated loan and bond markets. How do you see this competition evolving forward, and not just with private credit, but also loans versus bonds going forward?
Sure. It's a great question. Look, and we get it a lot, as you can imagine. And the answer has been changing from year to year over the last several years. I mean, if you look at 2022, when there was that really sharp dislocation in the distributed markets, that was a real heyday for private credit as an alternative for financing when a lot of the distributed market was really struggling, both in terms of placing underwritten deals, but also in terms of having confidence about underwriting into that market backdrop. But then as we began to recover in 2023, and certainly through a very, very strong 2024, what you've seen is the distributed markets, be they fixed rate, you know, and fixed rate high yield or floating rate, either in the term form of floating rate notes or loans, as that market has come back and gotten to an extremely strong place where we're frankly at unusually tight spread levels by any kind of historical standards, the two markets have come much more back into balance. So I think where that leaves us right now, if you look across, if we sort of parse it into three categories, fixed rate, high yield, floating rate, leveraged credit, which would incorporate both floating rate notes and leveraged loans, And then private credit, which is, as you know, is almost always a floating rate product as well. All three of those categories are in incredibly rude health right now. We're certainly seeing that expressed in instances where financing is sought and across all three of those types of financing. And you're seeing very constructive, you know, very borrower slash issuer friendly levels being achieved across all three categories. And we're seeing increased number of instances where you'll have multiple products involved. So you might have a fixed rate bond beside a distributed loan, beside a tranche of private credit that's also in loan format. So the three legs of the stool, if you will, are really getting along rather well at the moment. And sort of the relative strength of each of those types of financing alternatives will be determined going forward by the backdrop. And if we get another dislocation like we did in 2022, then I think you'll see a lot more private credit activity. But if conditions continue to be as strong as they are right now in the distributed markets, I think you're going to see a lot more issuers and borrowers leaning into the distributed market because of their ability to achieve tighter pricing and frankly, slightly more favorable terms on in documentation. The market seems to be in a very, very good balance right now. So it's hard to find a story in here that says one product or the other is going to be gaining material market share. I think there's room for all of them, and there will continue to be going forward. And that's one of the themes that we've been following for the last several years and which seems to be accelerating. And I referenced it in the instance of transactions where you have multiple products sitting side by side. There is an ongoing convergence of the various asset classes, fixed rate, floating rate, distributed, and then private credit. We are starting to see more and more signs of the various products converging. And at the end of the day, it's all leveraged credit. It just comes in different flavors.
Do you think we should be seeing more of these type of hybrid financing structures with private credit providing, for example, peak structures, junior tranches, and then syndicated markets providing loans or bonds?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of what I was just talking about was more about sort of your senior secured piece of the transaction. But yeah, absolutely. We're seeing lots of money trying to deploy in those more junior tranches. They might be PIK, they might be pref form, or they might be traditional junior, whether unsecured fixed rate or second lien type tranches. So there's plenty of capacity in the market for those types of investments. I think going forward, if the market does continue to grind tighter and we start to see floating rates come down and continued tightening in the fixed rate market, you know, that should open up more room for some of those junior capital tranches in the junior part of the capital structure. And there's plenty of money on the private credit side to deploy, whether it's in first lien alongside distributed instruments or in that junior piece of the capital structure. It's interesting. I think one of the things that's been, you know, very useful about the private credit market is it is more flexible in terms of currencies, and it's more flexible in terms of having, you know, a delayed draw component, which is something that the distributed market really struggles with because the investor base there is built to invest immediately in a cash instrument and finds that something that's got a delayed draw period to be a little more challenging to do. It's not impossible, but it's just more difficult. So that's one of the, you know, reasons I was discussing how these various instruments can live alongside one another in the first lien part of the capital structure. But by and large, plenty of capital out there across all of these different types of asset classes, whether it's on the first lien secured basis or in some kind of junior capacity.
Thank you, Ben. Ben, it's been a pleasure having you on this podcast, and thank you for sharing your insights.
Absolutely. Again, thank you for the invitation, and hopefully the audience will find some of the commentary useful.
I'm sure they will. And for our audience, thank you for listening to the show today, and please visit Spotify or iTunes for more DebtWire podcasts.